This is a Glass Box Media Podcast.
Welcome to This Week in Travel, the show that talks to some of the most interesting and notable travelers in the world. Learn about the top travel stories from the world of travel, get valuable travel tips, and have some fun in the process. Now here are your hosts, Gary Arndt and Jen Leo.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of This Week in Travel. My name is Gary Arndt, coming to you from a chilly Wisconsin. I don't know what happened, but temperatures here dropped like 40 degrees this week, and it's like spring never happened. But that's what happens when you're in a landlocked state. With me again, as usual, the co-host with the most, who's not from a landlocked state, and I'm guessing the temperature is exactly the same it was as last time, Jen Leo. How are you doing, Jen?
I'm doing great. Feels like summer out here in Carlsbad.
I'm shocked. I'm absolutely shocked. With us this week, brand new to the show, kind of keeping up with the theme of post-COVID travel. She just got back from a trip to Africa, been on the Amateur Traveler before, and runs the website Travel Beyond the Obvious. Please welcome Madeline Jawar. How are you doing?
Hi. Hi, I'm great, you guys. How are you?
Good.
I'm excited to hear all about South Africa. I have not been yet.
You haven't been to South Africa, Jen?
I've actually spent quite a bit of time there.
Yeah, I've been to every state in South Africa, and I've actually spent a lot of time hanging out there. But that was all prior to the pandemic. And you just came back from there. And I think your experiences, because South Africa, I know for those who've been kind of following things in the news, they had their own COVID problems. They had a strain of the virus that popped up there. So why don't you tell us about your experiences, Madeline, where you went, and let's start with, of course, the COVID stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am still jet lagged. Got back on Monday. And they were, South Africa is actually entering what they're calling a third wave. So for anyone listening to this now, I would keep my eye on it. Everybody was all, as we were leaving, people were really concerned that they were going into another lockdown. So it's something to keep your eye on, but we did, a 14-day trip. We did safari and then Cape Town in the middle and then a second safari. So the first safari we did was up in the Kalahari Desert up near the border with Botswana. And we did 4 days there and then went to Cape Town for 4 days and then flew all the way east to the next to the Kruger National Park, did 4 days in the Sabi Sands Private Game Reserve. Amazing, all of it. I will talk your ear off. I'll just let you guys lead the conversation because otherwise we'll be like 3 hours.
Sounds good. What tour operator did you use?
Oh gosh, I got to pull it up. You know, I off the top of my head, I can pull it up, but I have a very good friend who's a high-end travel agent, and I just said to her, we want to do an epic family trip. Where do you think we should go? Where have you gone on your trips? What have you booked for people? And she actually pulled out a whole bunch of different ideas. And, you know, I just showed my husband this 13-day itinerary and he was like, I want to do that.
So you kind of DIY'd it yourself through research?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. I booked a package and I actually do, I have a travel company and I charge fees and I do everything. I'm not a travel agent. I don't, you know, sell single packages, but this was the first time where I was like, I'm just buying a package, because I just needed someone else to do it for me. So I just actually pulled up her contact information.
That's okay.
It's the tour company is Southern Destinations. And I would totally give a shout out to them. They were fantastic. So, you know, my travel agent friend, travel agents are amazing when, you know, they know you and you don't know where you want to go. And they're like, well, how about Thailand? How about, you know, this? How about South Africa? How about that? And so my travel agent friend knew me and she was throwing ideas out there. And this is one of the things that she suggested. So yeah, southerndestinations.com is the tour operator that she set us up with. And it was amazing. I've never done a trip like that. You know, I plan all my own trips and I do research and I don't usually just send a lump sum of money and then show up at the airport with, you know, the app. But this
Madeline,
was different.
Tell us where you were. So you just got back. So where did you spend your year in the pandemic? Where are you from? How important was it getting out of the country? How come you decided to leave the country instead of traveling within the country? Give us a little bit of background.
Sure. I am originally Canadian. I am now happily living in the San Francisco Bay Area, and my husband and I have said that if we can ever pay off our mortgage, we're never leaving. This is the 11th place I've lived. So I spent 5 years in Italy and 2 years in Sweden, and my husband is British Indian. So we, you know, the funny thing about our travels is that, his mother is in England and his sister's in Switzerland and my family's in Canada and he's got family in India. And so, and I have an Italian travel business. So we always joke, like, South Africa is the first new place that we've been in probably a couple decades, because we always go Canada, England, Switzerland, India, Italy, you know, and then repeat. So we're like, we haven't been anywhere. As kind of exotic as that all sounds, we don't go anywhere. So this was just, we wanted to do an epic family trip. We spent, you know, I know you guys do a travel tip at the end of the show, and I was, you know, walking all over California during the pandemic with my dog. So that'll probably be my travel tip. But yeah, we've just been hunkered down here in the Bay Area, you know, like everyone else, I think.
When you said it was an epic family trip, were you bringing kids? And if so, how many and what were their ages?
Yeah, so I've got two teenagers. So I've got a 14-year-old son and a 16-year-old daughter. And, yeah, we just decided we wanted to do this epic family trip. And, you know, partly, we do these Europe trips all the time and we had that budget that we hadn't spent. And so we're like, you know what? We've all been cooped up in this pandemic. Let's just go. But we wanted to go somewhere where the kids would be excited to go. And, you know, 14 and a 16-year-old, they didn't really want to leave their friends.
Yep.
so we were like, look, we're going to see lions and zebras and giraffes. And, so that was, I mean, it was absolutely amazing trip for teenagers. Absolutely amazing. It's what the perfect age to.
What did they like the most? What were they interested in?
You know, just watching the animals. So my daughter really loved the shopping in Cape Town. I mean, you know, Gary, you said you've been all over South Africa. The shopping is, pretty amazing. There's just so much, so creative. I mean, there was a guy that like made sculptures out of flip-flops that were recovered from the ocean, and just so many creative artisanal shops and markets. So she loved that. But really, hands down for everyone was just the safaris. You know, you're out. It's almost like, you know, in one of your most recent shows where you talked to Chris Christensen about his pandemic trip to the Galapagos, he said it's almost like a vacation from the pandemic. And that's what it is when you go on safari. You're out in the open air. You don't need to wear masks. You're in fresh air and sunshine all day. You know, your kids are not on their devices because you're like, look at that giraffe. Look at those baby lions, you know. It was just a fantastic, and you're also not, you know, your teenagers are not really the kind of, it's not a stage in life where you can like sit and chat all day, you know? It's not the kind of, we didn't want to do like a road trip where we were all stuck in the same car for, you know, 10 hours a day. That would not be ideal with this ages of kids.
Sure. So tell us about how the two safaris compared. You took two safaris in two different parts of the country. Let us know a little bit more about that.
Yeah, sure. The first one was up north near Botswana. The main difference was the animals and just the size of the game reserve. So we chose private game reserves, which just means that they focus really on conservation and on leaving things better than we found them. And that was really important to us. So we chose these private game reserves. The first one, we stayed at this amazing place called Swalu, which is TSWALU. If anyone wants to look it up, they have research scientists on site. They do really important research with, pangolins and butterflies, and, they just really contribute a lot. And it's actually owned by the Oppenheimer family of the De Beers diamond, industry. And so the grandfather of the family founded De Beers, and then the son, I guess, kind of was less interested in diamonds. And then the grandchildren are really interested in conservation. You know, grandpa, you made all these mines and now we need to diamond mines. Now we need to kind of give back. So they're very, very focused on conservation and saving the land and protecting the animals. And, it was, I want to say it's like a 250,000 acre game reserve. And you really, the expertise of the trackers is so evident, because you really have to drive, you know, it's really kind of empty and sparse. And so these trackers are amazing. Like, just the fact that you can find animals, in this giant, most giant of a space is really impressive. So that really stood out to us. There were no elephants up there. And they also, in that game reserve, they separate out the lion area with a fence. And so we were actually able to stay outside, sleep under the stars one night, which was definitely a highlight of the trip. And we knew that, you know, we were like, well, what about the lions? And they said, yeah, the lions are fenced off in a different area. So that was really like just seeing the southern hemisphere stars. That was just one of the highlights of that trip, that experience. And then, yeah, when we were in the Kruger, or in the, more specifically in the Sabi Sands, in the east part of South Africa, that was really elephant central. And it's one of those things that, you know, it was like when I went to college and I first saw a squirrel, I was like, oh, so cute. Look at the squirrel. And then like 3 days later, I was like, oh my God, these are like pests. And I love the elephants from, you know, the start to the finish. But at first we were like, oh my God, there's an elephant. And then it's like, wait, there's 40 more elephants. And then we had, a watering hole behind our bedroom, window, and we would just sit for hours and watch the elephants just walk by. And, so we weren't there long enough for it to actually get like boring, but we were definitely spent many, many hours watching elephants.
Madeline, and yeah, I am looking at this website for Southern Destinations, and it's jaw dropping. Gary, yeah, if you got to do a quarter of the stuff that is in here, I mean, it's just mind blowing. I don't know how, first of all, I don't know how you picked one of their packages, because they've got beach and safari vacations, family safaris, gorilla trekking, luxury big five safaris, migration safaris, walking safaris, self-drive holidays, and it just goes on and continues and continues. And I'm looking at these pictures, and there's Jeeps, and there's small planes, and there's little boats. Did you get to, how many different types of transportation did you use while you were in South Africa?
So we did the small planes, because to get to both safaris, both safaris had landing strips. And so we had to flew from Cape Town from one and from Johannesburg for the other. We did a helicopter tour. We did, obviously all the safaris are in, they're not Jeeps, they're like Land Rovers. And one of them in the Sabi Sands, our Land Rover was electric, which was so impressive. I mean, they had, huge solar panels at the place, and they would plug this Land Rover in, and it would get like sick. We were peppering the guide with questions. We're like, well, how many hours of charge can it get? And the animals were so much more calm around this Land Rover because it's so quiet. Anyway, back to your question. And then we didn't take any boats. The final, transportation that we took was the gondola up Table Mountain in Cape Town. That was probably, wow. probably oh, we did. No, we did take a boat because we did a shark dive. We did the, yeah, we went down in a cage and waited for sharks that never came. It was a bit of a bust. And my 14-year-old was seasick the entire time.
Oh,
so
no.
That day was probably the roughest day of the trip.
I'm guessing Gary? That was probably near Hermanus or Gunspy.
Simon's Town.
Near
Simon's
Cape Town?
Town. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I've done that there. Except we actually had sharks. We had one that actually not only grabbed the bait, but went underwater with it while we were in the cage and kind of tipped the whole boat for a while.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Gary, do you have any pictures of yourself with sharks?
I have pictures. So we had to take turns in the cage. And when you're in the cage, you can't really, I didn't have a waterproof camera or anything. So there's nothing that I have of myself with it, but I never take pictures of myself anyhow. I probably have fewer than 10 pictures of myself from the last 15 years of travel. So, because I am always the least photogenic thing wherever I go.
You don't do selfies?
I do not.
I make Gary take a picture with me every time we go somewhere. Every time we're together in person, I make sure we take a picture. But Madeline, back to this amazing trip. Tell us about the accommodations. What kind of accommodations? Did you have the tents? Did you have a luxe lodge? All of it looks amazing.
Yeah, we decided to go all out for this trip. So people had been saying to us, oh, you'll have tents and you'll have bathrooms outside the tents and just be careful of the animals. Yeah, no, we went up a few notches. So I don't think we had the typical African safari vacation. We had really luxury accommodations. You can look up Swallow, the first accommodation we had, TSWALU. They did an amazing job at just integrating these huts. They were like thatched huts and they integrated them with the landscape to the point where you're driving up and I was like, where is this place? And then all of a sudden it's right there in front of you because it was almost camouflaged. It was kind of like, buried into the nature. And they just did, the design was incredible. So no, we had, linen sheets and running water and outdoor showers and an outdoor patio where we would watch in Swallow. We saw lots of different types of antelope when we were sitting on our back patio, wildebeest and, I'm blanking on the name of it, but lots of animals. There was a turtle back there, tons of birds. The birds are the thing that I really wasn't, I can spot a giraffe and I can spot a lion, but there were so many birds where I was like, well, looks like a vulture, maybe, I don't know, but yeah. And then the second accommodation in Sabi Sands was, we stayed, it was called Cheetah Plains. Cheetah Plains is, I do luxury travel, you guys, and I used to work as a guide for Butterfield and Robinson, which is a 5-star, I used to guide luxury trips. Now I was the person schlepping the bags and I was the person like waiting on the clients, but I got to stay in really nice places. Cheetah Plains is hands down the nicest place I have ever stayed by a lot. This place is unbelievable. I don't even know where to start. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was the place where we had the watering hole outside our back room and watched our bedroom and watched elephants. And the staff was just, it was really, these places are about the staff, really. I mean, it really was, they were just kind and attentive and unobtrusive. And I really just can't say enough about Cheetah Plains.
Cheetah Plains. So I haven't been to Africa. So tell me a little bit more about where that is. Gary, have you been?
To Africa?
No, the Cheetah Plains.
I don't know if I've been there, but I've been to like Kruger and a lot of the other parts of South Africa.
Yeah, Cheetah Plains is the name of our accommodation. So it's the hotel that's in, so Kruger National Park is the is the public national park, and then Sabi Sands is the private game reserve that's part of Kruger. So the animals can come in and out of the Sabi Sands private game reserve. And then Cheetah Plains is the hotel that we stayed, or the accommodation that we stayed at inside the Sabi Sands game reserve. And these, you know, these safari, I should also say, is like the perfect pandemic thing to do. I mean, all of these, you know, in the pandemic, the jeeps are private, the trackers and the guides are, you know, they don't, you interact, everything is private because of the pandemic. And you really, it's really a perfect way to be completely safe. Even the staff said they only interacted with us.
I found the Cheetah Plains on the website. So for our listeners, it looks like an absolutely modern luxe hotel with African plains in the background.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah. I mean, it looks like part museum, part museum gallery, part architect's private home.
Yeah, the architecture was stunning, stunning. Like, it's glass walls with concrete floor. I mean, and the light too would just hit at the right time of day at the right angle. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. And, you know, the thing with the accommodations that we just really appreciated, you know, I'm the kind of person that I'm a little bit go, go, go. Like, I kind of don't stay in the hotel very long. I'm kind of up early and out all day and back late. And, so I usually don't spend a lot of time in my hotel room, but, you know, Gary, I don't know if you found this, but I love the safari rhythm where we were up before sunrise on a game drive as the sun rose, and then kind of for 2.5-3 hours, and then we'd be back at the hotel for, you know, 5 hours in the middle of the day, and we would just sit by the pool or read a book or nap, or, and there was that downtime, and then you kind of head out again around 3:30 or 4, you're out for sunset, you watch the sunset, you kind of come home, you have a drink, you have dinner. And I just love that rhythm. And so it meant that we really were at the hotel, quite a few hours every day. So we really did really appreciate those nice hotels.
It sounded like, the pandemic was just non-existent out there. Can you tell us a little bit more about how the safaris and the tour groups were affected?
So it definitely was a main topic of conversation, and it was different in Cape Town compared to the safaris. So just for the safaris, like, we didn't have, so the staff all wore masks, you know, our tracker and our guide in the Land Rovers wore masks, and the staff in the hotels wore masks, but they told us, we know you guys are vaccinated. We've all they lived on the property. And if they left the property, they had to have a test before they, like when they came back, before they interacted again, like even if they ran to, quote unquote, ran to the store, which was like 2 hours away. So you definitely knew, you know, it was definitely front and center. And our guides, they were telling us, you know, we're so grateful to see you guys. We haven't had any work for almost a year. One of the places, the Tswalu, had been shut down for 5 months, and the Cheetah Plains had been shut down for a year. So they were so grateful and so thrilled and so happy to see us. But things are wobbly, you know, like the guide said, you know, normally we get 6 months on, 6 weeks on and 2 weeks off. And in those 2 weeks off, we can plan, you know, our families live 5, 6, 7, 8 hour drives away. And so for those 2 weeks off, we can actually plan to go see our families. And they said, with the pandemic, we're super grateful that we're getting travelers back, but we have 3 days on and 2 days off, and 5 days on and 1 day off, and 3 days on and 3 days off. And they just said, we just have to take what we can get. So it means they're a little bit tired. They're a little bit nervous. They don't know what's coming. They don't know when things are going to get, quote unquote, back to normal, but they're super grateful. And so that was kind of the pandemic experience with the safari, and I'm sure it'll just get more and more stable. Also because with South Africa, as Americans, it's one of the places that we're allowed to go to. And we met other Americans who were there who said, we just needed to travel. We just wanted to get away. And we were like, okay, we can't go to Europe. Europe is closed. And they're like, we wanted to go to Peru, but they said Machu Picchu was closed. So then they're like, okay, where can we go? We can go to South Africa. And we probably had that conversation 3 or 4 times. And we didn't meet that many other people. Like there was people on the shark boat. We had that conversation with them, you know? So that seemed to be a reason that Americans were going to South Africa. And then when we were in Cape Town, you know, just more examples of how things are wobbly, the local guide who took us around, you know, he took us up to Table Mountain, and the operators of the gondola of Table Mountain were like, a local tour guide, yay. And they were clapping and, you know, joyful. And they're like, we haven't seen a local, like he had his little badge on that said local licensed South African tourist guide. Mm-hmm. And they were clapping and dancing, you know, they're like, we haven't seen a local guide. So, you know, it's a nice kind of celebratory atmosphere when you're with a guide. On the other hand, the guide was like, I would love to recommend this restaurant for you, but call and check to see if it's open. And I would love to recommend this market for you, but I'm not sure how many of the vendors are still there. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, you know, on one hand, it's great for the traveler. You have no lines, for example, at the Table Mountain cable car. You have grateful locals. You know, they want you there. But on the other hand, it's you have to be flexible and patient.
What did you have to do in terms of a COVID protocol? Was your family vaccinated? Do you have to take tests?
Yes. So the COVID stuff was the most stressful part of all of this. So my family, my daughter's 16 and my son is 14. So my husband and I are both vaccinated. My daughter got one jab, and then we were actually away while she was scheduled to get her second one. So she's actually getting that next week. And then my 14-year-old, when we left, was not eligible to get a COVID vaccine, and while we were away, he became eligible. So he actually just got his first jab yesterday. But the interesting thing is that nobody cared that we were vaccinated. What they wanted were the negative tests. And, you know, it was pretty stressful getting ready for this trip. And the COVID test was one piece. They said, you know, we flew out via Amsterdam with KLM, and KLM was amazing to remind us. They sent us so many reminder emails. Here's a type of test you need. Here's when you need to get it. You need to get it within 72 hours of departure. All this stuff. We had so much information. It was so clear. And the challenge was finding the test that would give us the results soon enough, because the test that we needed to get said results within 72 hours. And I'm like, well, I need the results sooner than that, because I need, you know, we were departing Saturday at 2, and so I had a note on my calendar Wednesday at 2, which was 72 hours prior to departure, get your COVID test. But if I get my COVID test Wednesday at 2 and it takes 72 hours to get my results back, well, I don't have them in time for boarding, right? So that was a problem we had to solve, and we solved it. But it took me hours. I mean, I was calling my doctor and they're like, we can't do, I mean, I, you know, I won't go into all of it, but it took me hours to figure out which tests we should get, where, when, how, and then some of them we had to get, for the results, we had to not only produce the negative test, but we had to make sure that the test provider was certified by the WHO as some kind of, I don't know, certified official test provider. So we live really close to Stanford. And so we just went on to the website and, like, you know, clicked through 10 links deep to figure out whether they had the certificate of the WHO, which we found. So then we printed that. So that was part of, you know, when we showed our negative COVID test at the airport, we had to show them this certificate. But the way back was a disaster, I have to say. We flew back, through Paris with Air France, and Air France did not give us any information about which test. It was just like, prepare for your flight, your upcoming flight, you know, make sure you have, you know, the regular pre-COVID emails you normally get. And we were like, well, which test do we need? And the information, it was clear as mud. I mean, we went to the Air France website. It was like, well, if you're transiting through Paris, you need this. But if your final destination is in Paris, you need that. And it was just not clear. It was, and I, the way that I said that, it sounds clear, but it wasn't even clear. It was like, you need one of these 14 tests. And I was looking at the tests and I didn't recognize any of them. And I was like, can someone give me a clear answer on which tests we need? So we actually had a handler who met us, met our safari plane as we arrived from the Sabi Sands, landed in Johannesburg. We had someone meet us who was organized by the tour operator, took us to the rapid antigen test, waited while we got our tests, which were 15 minutes, accompanied us to the check-in. We got to the check-in and they denied us boarding. And they were like, nope, you needed a PCR test. And we were like, well, where and when did you tell us that? You know, like, and I am a, you know, I'm a travel consultant. So I was like, what, you know, you peep, like, I was so mad. And I was like, where does it say this? Where, tell me where it says this and when you told us. You guys can hear I'm like still riled up. But, anyway, so the PCR test, takes 2 hours minimum. And we were boarding in, you know, 45 minutes. So we flew home a day late. We had to stay a night in Johannesburg, stay in the hotel. The PCR test cost us $600. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that was not a big deal. It was just something that was totally preventable. And I was really, and then when I went on to my travel consultant, you know, I'm in these private travel consultant groups and I posted and I was like, hey, you guys, this crazy thing happened. And people pushed back and they said, you know what? There are thousands of Americans arriving from the Caribbean and Mexico every day with rapid antigen tests and they are entering the country. So I still don't understand why. Maybe it's coming from Europe. Maybe it's coming from Paris. Maybe it's, I still am. You know, I still don't have clarity on why that rapid antigen test was not enough for us to come back to the U.S. And they didn't care about our, I showed them the vaccine cards. I'm like, we are vaccinated. They didn't care.
Right. So. Well, I'm sorry you went through that, Madeline. I've left the country twice during COVID. And the first time my husband organized all the details for us to go to Costa Rica, and there were a lot of details, but I didn't have to stay on top of them. But I know that we had special apps, QR codes, questionnaires, all of that, to get into, Costa Rica. And that was so early that I don't think we had to test to come back into the States. But just last week we went to Mexico and you did not need to test going in, but you did need to test coming back out. And we were at a luxe all-inclusive resort in Cabo for a wedding and the hotel took care of it. So it was pretty wild. Like it was actually, I've been tested several times and it was the worst test, worst feeling test. I knew it was a PCR test. I knew that, but, it was wild because the woman who took our test, she was, you know, in a biohazard suit, but we were just in a hotel room and the doctor was sitting next to a printer and his computer. And it was really interesting. We I think maybe it was because you had the transfers in different countries that it was a little bit extra, but everything I've known is that the PCR test is the one you take for travel. And, rapid is kind of like what you take to go clear yourself before going to a party or something.
My guess is like within 6 months that the vaccination is going to be more accepted, that I think people are still, you know, adapting to that.
Sure.
And probably it's going to be more secure because, you know, with tests, you can have false positives and false negatives. Whereas, you know, if you just look at what's happening in the U.S., for example, with COVID rates, which are down significantly, I think it's, you know, being vaccinated is going to be a far better symbol than a test result will. And maybe if you go back, you know, later this year, you're going to probably find a very different experience.
Yeah. And that was part of the confusion too, as I was talking to people and they're like, you know what? Things are changing so fast. Like this, the reality that you experienced was different 6 months ago. And I think it's going to be different, as you say, with vaccinations are going to be the thing that's more important than tests.
Well, and different so country to it, country.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 100%. And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't when they said you're denied boarding. I was like, you know what? It's a pandemic. Like, I get it. I wasn't expecting it to be, you know, this was an important trip for my family and we decided to do it, but I wasn't expecting it to be just completely smooth. And it was, you know, we didn't even know until 48 hours before we left. We weren't sure we were going. I had to renew my daughter's passport. Forget about renewing a passport right now. There are no 3-day turnaround services. There are no emergent. There are no, 8-day expedited services. There are no appointments at any passport office anywhere in the United States. You cannot renew a U.S. passport right now in less than about 4 to 6 weeks. You just can't unless you get an emergency, appointment because somebody has already died. Somebody's dying or on their deathbed, not good enough. If they've already died, you can get an appointment to go bring home their remains or go to a funeral. But I actually, pulled in my congresswoman. I didn't realize, but one of my congresswoman's jobs is to help, with federal agencies, and in the sub menu under help me with a federal agency is passport office. So once I discovered that, I was like, okay, Anna Eshoo, shout out to Anna Eshoo. She got us an appointment at the passport office and we got our I got my daughter's passport renewed less than 24 hours before departure. So it was really, you know, this pandemic travel is no joke.
Well, your experiences, you know, I get people asking me all the time. It's like, oh, where are you going to, what's the first place you're going to go? And I have nothing planned. And everyone's thinking like, oh, you get the vaccine and there you go, problem solved. And no, it's not, because you still have to deal with all the, there's still so much with the testing and a lot of, you know, busy work and paperwork that needs to be done that it's still, I think, a very unpleasant experience. And
it was very stressful. Yeah, it was very stressful. And I would also say too, like, people have to remember that travel infrastructure, people, you know, scaled way back. So I tried to call Delta at one point and I sat on hold for 2.5 hours listening to old music, and I was working and I was doing all sorts of stuff. And when I had to go to the bathroom, I like gave my phone to my kids. I'm like, here, babysit my phone in case somebody answers, you know? So it wasn't like a hardship, but after 2.5 hours, I think I had to go to the gym or something. Like I was like, I can't, you know? And I finally drove to SFO and I walked up to the Delta counter and I'm like, I cannot talk to anybody. So I'm like face to face with your, and I did, I talked to one of the check-in people and I timed it. I looked at the Delta flight. So I timed it. So I knew I didn't want to arrive when there was like angry people in line and I was just asking a question, so that I knew the flight had already boarded. And so I timed it and the airport was empty. So it really wasn't a big deal. So this very nice Delta person talked to me and I said, look, I waited on hold for 2.5 hours and this is why I'm here. And I really just have a question. And she said, you know, the call centers have just, they laid people off for the pandemic. And so we just as travelers need to understand that the infrastructure we're used to just isn't back up ready and working yet. You know, it just isn't back up to support us yet. Understandably. Well,
I think there needs to be grace everywhere, because it's not just travel. If you're going around town and you're shopping or you're going to restaurants or you're going to stores, every place that I go to, I see a hiring sign in the window. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody is working short staffed or with new staff. And, you know, we have to just be a little bit patient with everybody, as they probably need to be patient with us, as we are so eager and excited, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to our next segment of the show then. We always have a destination of the week. And I'll actually go first. I have a South Africa destination.
Cool.
If you want to see wildlife, Kruger's a great place to go. However, there's one particular animal that you're not necessarily going to see a lot of there, but you can see tons of them if you go to this place I'm going to be recommending. And that would be the city of St. Lucia. St. Lucia is located north of Durban. It's on the east coast of South Africa, kind of in the northeast corner. And Isimgiliso Wetlands Park, it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, is probably one of the best places in the world to see hippopotamuses. And they are everywhere. Lake St. Lucia just has tons of them, and there are boat rides you can take from St. Lucia where you can see everything. And it's a fantastic experience. And it's a corner of South Africa that a lot of people don't necessarily visit. But if you're in Durban, all you got to do is drive up the coast. It's pretty simple. And I should just add generally that the eastern coast of South Africa is kind of the warm coast. So the warm waters that are coming down from the Indian Ocean are all there. And like in Cape Town, that's kind of where they hit the colder waters that are coming up from Antarctica. So Cape Town's always a little bit colder because it's further south, but really because of those currents. So that side of South Africa near Durban and above is where you're going to have much better temperatures than what you're going to see in the rest of the country. So St. Lucia, South Africa for hippopotamuses is my recommendation. Jen, you got a destination for us?
Yes, and stop me if I mentioned it in the last show. I just got back from Los Cabos, Cabo San Lucas, and we had an amazing stay at the all-inclusive Garza Blanca Resort. Now, Garza Blanca has three different destinations, Los Cabos, Cancun, and Riviera Maya. We went to the Los Cabos one. We were there for a wedding, so the destination was chosen for us. But I was pretty amazed by staying at a luxe all-inclusive. And Los Cabos, I hadn't been there since my college days, so we're talking 25 years or so. And I was shocked. It was the most modern and cleanest Mexican beach town in Mexico that I had ever been to. It was so built up. And I think what we're talking about here is the tourist corridor, not the downtown where there's lots of bars and partying. But this tourist corridor had all sorts of fancy resorts, if you're into fancy resorts. And they greeted us with champagne and cold towels. And our room was this humongous one-bedroom suite with two bathrooms and a soaking tub and an outside balcony with a dining room table and a large hammock with an ocean view. And I was just blown away. We don't do a lot of travel like that. We're probably more mid-range. So this was definitely a treat. The wedding was beautiful. It was the first beach wedding I think I'd been to. And that was pretty cool as well. But Garza Blanca, if you've never been to Cabo San Lucas and you are looking for somebody to take care of everything for you, and I mean everything, and you just want to go enjoy the beach and the multiple pools. I think they had 7 pools. And you want to return to a bit of normalcy without your mask. This was it. And they took care of the testing for us to go back home. Now, of course, after doing this, I think I would have stayed a couple extra days. We were there 4 nights maybe, and we ventured out once to go look at some beach properties for sale that were about 40 minutes north of us. But the next time I want to go to Todos Santos and a coastal town called, I think it's called Cerritos. And so I want to go there next time. But I was very pleasantly surprised at how easy it was to get to, how clean it was, how nice everyone was. And I actually really liked all inclusive. So there you go. Garza Blanca in Los Cabos. Well done, Gary, for choosing to have your wedding there. And yes, very nice.
Was Gary's wedding?
Not this Gary. My other friend, Gary.
I was like, wait. Jen, that sounds amazing.
It was. And I don't usually travel that way. And so I think it was extra special. But we did run into a couple that was celebrating their second anniversary there. And they were just as happy as we were. They were coming from Atlanta. And they were on an anniversary trip. And they were enjoying it themselves, too. So not just for wedding travel people, but people who want to be taken care of a little bit. It was quite nice. And to be also straight right on the beach with pools and loveliness. There you go.
All right, Madeline, do you have a destination for us?
Wow. Both of yours are incredible. So I did not pick a South African destination. I picked something pretty close here in California that I has been one of my pandemic happy places. And I love walking along the coastal trail, which stretches for many, 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 many miles along the coast of California. It's high up on the bluffs, and I picked a favorite piece of that trail. I usually walk about 2 miles one way and turn around and walk back. And so when I look for my favorite section of the trail, I want somewhere where I can park easily. I live about a 45-minute drive from the Pacific Ocean. So by the time I get there, I need to use the bathroom. So I, especially during the pandemic, I'm sure everybody realizes like Starbucks closed their bathrooms, gas station bathrooms were not always, you know, reliable. So that factored into this as well. And then I bring my dog. And so this, my favorite stretch that I'm about to describe is, what I decided is the perfect pandemic, Pacific Ocean coastal trail hike. And so that is, parking at the Ritz-Carlton in Half Moon Bay. And the reason I like parking there is because they've got free spots. If you park there and you don't pick one of the free spots, it's $45 to valet, but they have a section of the parking garage with about 25 spots for people who can just park for free and go to the beach. And then of course I go into the 5-star hotel and I use the wonderful bathroom with the nice soap and all that. And I can bring my dog inside the hotel. And then I start out on my hike, which is on the bluffs and, just has amazing views over the Pacific Ocean. The first part of the hike is actually through the Ritz-Carlton golf course, which is, you know, there's pros and cons to that, but it's kind of an interesting hike. And then it kind of goes on a dirt trail, and it's just spectacular. I find it soothing to my soul to just kind of stare at the ocean as I'm walking. And I usually see dolphins and whales and, watch the pelicans. And, I usually walk to the, Cowal Parissima trailhead, which then has stairs that go down to a beach. And so we go down the stairs and I let my dog off the leash and he runs and runs and runs and runs. And then we go back up the stairs and we head back to the Ritz-Carlton. And, it's kind of also been something that I do with my daughter as a mother-daughter thing. And if my daughter comes, then we, at that point, as we're walking back to our car, we pull out our Starbucks app and we order our favorite drinks and we, swing by Starbucks and then we drive back, 45 minutes back home with the tired dog asleep in the back. So that's like I probably did that hike once, some weeks once a week, during the pandemic. So it's my favorite stretch of California coastline for those reasons.
All right. Let's go on to our tip of the week. Jen, you got a tip?
I do. I had not anticipated that we were going to talk so much about COVID testing, but I have been using covidclinic.org, and they have many testing sites around the country, not in every state, but you can go to a map to see where they are located. They have them in Chicago, in Detroit, all over California, Vegas, Tucson, Colorado, Texas, many, many places. And it's been really easy. So when we first went to Costa Rica, it was a whole thing to get the tests done through our doctors, and I think it was free, but I've been going for convenience with this COVID clinic that is just down the street from us, and it's $100 for the rapid test, and it's $150-ish for the PCR test. The rapid test is done, you know, less than an hour, and the PCR test was done the next day, and for me, paying for that kind of convenience, knowing it's right there, knowing I can just sign up online, drive through and get it. It's a drive through. And these days there's not much testing going on. So, it's not like there's lines and lines like there was last year before the holidays. But anyways, it's been super easy. Hopefully that you're living in a town that where it's near. And if you want to pay that money to get it done quickly, covidclinic.org.
Excellent. Madeline, do you have a tip or a pick for us this week?
I do. I thought I'd just highlight a piece of gear that I really found useful for this South Africa trip, and that is one of those portable luggage scales. It's just a it's a thing you hold in your hand, and it's probably 4 inches long and half an inch wide, and it has a strap sticking out from the bottom of it. You just hook your luggage on it, and you lift it up, and it tells you how much your luggage weighs. And for this trip, it was important because we, for these little planes, we had a pretty strict luggage restriction. And my husband, which was 22 kilos per person, which is quite a lot, actually. But my husband had 22 kilos of camera equipment. So not even including his, like, actual luggage, he was over. So and then obviously we could take his extra weight because we were all way under, but we also went shopping, and you know, so we really wanted to, we needed to weigh our luggage to make sure that it was okay within the limit. And I think too, you know, I historically, to weigh my luggage, I step on the scale and then I pick up my suitcase, and then I, you know, subtract my body weight, because you can't, you know, you can't exactly put a suitcase on a scale, and, you know, either the suitcase covers up the display or the scale isn't, you know, doesn't weigh it properly. So I just find this handheld luggage scale super useful. It was like $19.99 online, and I just found it really useful for this trip.
Excellent. And my recommendation this week is simply going to be to reiterate one of the things that Madeline talked about your passport. Because of all the things going on, you can't renew your passport as easily as you could before. So if you are anywhere within, say, a year of your passport expiring, just go do it now. And if it takes several weeks, it takes several weeks. You'll still have plenty of time, but then it's done and you don't have to worry about last second things. I've been in a position where I've had, it wasn't a passport expiring, it was a full passport. I had to get a new one. And you don't ever want to be in a position where you have to go somewhere and there's something wrong with your passport, either that it's full or that it's expiring or something else. So if you have the time, make sure to get that done as soon as possible. And now is a great time to do it, especially if you want to do it through the mail.
Yeah.
All right, then. Definitely. Let's wrap things up. Jen, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Jen Leo, and also at BitCuriousMom, where I'm talking all about my crypto adventures, and BitCuriousMom.com.
Tell you what, Jen, how about we release the first episode of This Week in Travel as an NFT?
I can't wait, Gary. I don't know how to do it yet, but I can't wait.
You're in charge of that.
I have the Ethereum to pay for the minting.
Okay. Madeline, where can people find you online?
ItalyBeyondTheObvious.com or TravelBeyondTheObvious.com, and all of the associated social media handles are on both of those websites.
Excellent. And as usual, you can find me over at Everything Everywhere Daily. Wherever you listen to this podcast, you can find that one too. So until next time, stay tuned for another episode of This Week in Travel.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts.